Very good morning and welcome to this Biz News Briefing. It's 5th of November and I'm Bongani Nielsen. We've got a full show for you today. And first up, we've got Carrie Ann Satteray, who's the executive and portfolio specialist at Cogent. She's going to be talking to us about the US election in just a moment. Once we've had that conversation with Kerry, we've got Ian Williamson, the CEO of Old Mutual Group, who will be joining us to talk about progress with Old Mutual Bank. And he's also going to give us an update on how he's feeling about the government of national unity and the positivity building in the South African space. Then we've got the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield, and he's giving some insights into how the Department of Trade and Industry is really starting to help the small, medium entrepreneur business in South Africa. And then to top off the show, we've got Jean-Pierre Verstappen, who is the founder and CEO of Protea Capital Management. He's going to be giving us a market update as we get through to that last quarter of the show. But let's go straight into our guest this morning, Carrie Ann Satteray. And Carrie Ann, it's a US election day. It's a big day. We've been waiting for this for many months now. Give us a sense of how you feel this is going to pan out and how the markets are going to react.
Yes, it certainly is a big day, Bronwyn. So thank you to be here with you this morning to unpack some of this. I think it's really important before we delve into the actual election specifics, and we're not here to speculate first and foremost, but it's really important to actually take a bit of stock of the US market as we currently see it today. You know, this year in particular, markets have really overreacted to some individual economic data points, and this has caused massive bouts of volatility in the system. But it's not necessarily justified by the fundamentals of what we view as a relatively stable US economy. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment, a lot of unknowns, but there is quite a lot of information that we do know. And the first and foremost, which is growth. Growth has been really defined against these hard landing bears. Those are the investors that are pricing in recession. And in fact, the Bureau of Economic Analysis in September actually released some data points which were really supportive of the growth in the US. We saw that they found an extra $300 billion in real GDP that was unaccounted for in the last few years. That's a huge quantum of money. To that end, there's also disposable income that was revised upwards, as well as savings rates were also revised upwards. And then most recently, we've had the job reports, which have come out and quelled concerns around the labor market. So all in all, Americans have been doing really well. They're earning, they're spending, and they're saving more than originally thought. So that's really supportive for long-term growth. But really importantly, if you actually unpack this growth, what is driving it? Well, the US has a large dominance of service consumption, and it's been like this for the last few decades. And that's a really important point in terms of creating a resilient economy, because service spend is a lot more predictable than goods spend. You know, we all know when times are tough, you don't buy, you know, those extra products, but you don't stop going to the doctor. And then if we also look at this in terms of
Carrie,
the stock market.
Before we go there, we didn't just need to. So do we, in the market space, do we just ignore the US election as noise? And whatever transpires will transpire. Just before we get into the broader US economy, is it noise, in your view, in terms of the election today?
You know, it's certainly not just noise. It's a huge event risk that has massive implications on the economy in terms of whatever happens in the US has large ripple effects. But we are less worried about a binary outcome. So there's a couple scenarios that we see could happen, and they'll affect markets differently. So the first would be a Trump sweep where he wins the presidency and Congress. Second would be if Kamala actually wins the presidency, but you have a divided Congress. And the third scenario, which we see as less likely and possibly more negative for markets, is if Trump wins the presidency, but you have a divided government. And there's a couple things that investors are looking for. They want to know what that means for debt levels in the US, and they also want to know what that means for policy. Now, from a debt perspective, both candidates are kind of viewing the debt burden in the same way. They're not necessarily prioritizing it. So that's kind of a net neutral outcome. But the policy component is a little bit more nuanced. So in a Kamala outcome where she wins the presidency, but it's a divided Congress, that's kind of status quo. There's not much change would happen, and that would probably be positive for markets. You may get a contested government, and that will create some short-term volatility until the inauguration. But it's Trump, the scenario two with Trump, if he is able to win both presidency and Congress, he can actually push through both his corporate tax promises, which is to reduce from 25% to 21%, and that'll be really positive for business earnings. And then that can also offset the negative consequences of the increased protective measures he's wanting to bring into play, which is the increased tariffs. So that outcome would be favorable. A less favorable outcome is the third one with Trump winning, and it's a divided Congress, largely because you can't actually push through any corporate tax changes without Congress support. And so that's kind of the possibilities. From our perspective, we do think a Senate majority is crucial for judicial appointments, for passing key legislation, for making sure that that growth component in the U.S. continues in order to outgrow that U.S. debt burden. And, you know, from our perspective right now, as in 8 hours before the U.S. wake up, the polls are too close to call. And that uncertainty is really, really high. I mean, we've got the VIX index way up in terms of elevated fear gauge levels. But then at the same time, you've also got the S&P 500 doing really well. It's an unusual combination. So what that tells us is that, yes, there's uncertainty around this election, but fundamentally, the earnings in the U.S. are really strong and there's a lot of investment opportunity out there.
And let's just pick up on that, because we also have a Fed interest rate decision coming on Thursday. And by all accounts, we will see another interest rate cut, which will continue to fuel the economy and the growth, that underlying growth that everybody is so desperately looking for, not only in the US, but around the world. And hopefully that will trigger similar cycles, for instance, in South Africa.
Yes, it's certainly been a challenge for central banks this year. How do you curb inflation but protect growth? So let's start in the US. The Fed, you know, they, in our view, in a nutshell, they will not cut rates as much as the markets expect. The Fed cut 50 basis points in September, and they're poised for another rate cut this week of around 25 basis points. But the recent solid job and wage data, which I referred to earlier, has kind of led to the market pricing out some of those cuts. So it's a little bit more balanced. But we do ultimately think the U.S. rates will settle higher than the market expects. We see core inflation staying around 3% versus the Fed's 2%. And then if we go a bit broader out, as you spoke about, you know, it's not just the U.S. This is impacting the rest of the world. In the U.K., the BOE, the Bank of England are also scheduled for rate cuts later this week. And the U.K. bond markets are really eyeing that potential inflation impact of the recent tax and spending mix that have just come out of the U.K.'s new budget. But overall in the UK, you know, we're seeing a tepid UK growth outlook. And this is really driving the Bank of England to cut more than markets have priced in. And to that end, we've actually just recently gone overweight UK gilts because of the opportunity there. And then finally, you've got the ECB in Europe, the European Central Bank, and they started their rate cutting cycle a while ago in June. And we've seen some consecutive rate cuts coming from them. It's really important to note that they'd hiked more and they tightened more, so they're coming off a higher base. But ultimately, that weak consumer activity in the region really gives them a little bit more room to loosen, and we see them cutting rates closer to our view, which is around 2%. And that's creating great opportunity in the bond market, especially within credit relative to the U.S.
Kerry, there's another theme that I want to touch on. We were recently at the Cogence Summit for 2024, an amazing lineup, including Larry Fink and Adrian Gore. Larry Fink, of course, being the CEO of BlackRock, Adrian Gore, CEO of Discovery Group. And there was a lot of discussion around emerging markets and South Africa in a comparison to other emerging markets. The old adage is, of course, that capital flows where capital is welcome. How is South Africa faring as an emerging market in comparison to the Brazils, the Indias, and the Chinas?
Yeah, so in general, Bronwyn, it's a really important time for emerging markets right now as the US are starting to cut rates. And why do I say this? Well, it's, if you see interest rates actually being higher for longer, it could be a really key pivot towards EM markets being in favor, because we'll see this increase in this interest rate differential. And then from a valuation perspective, you know, currently emerging market equities are actually priced at a really healthy discount relative to the developed market peers. And importantly, though, we're seeing a lot of divergence in performance across markets. So we've had the likes of Mexico and Brazil selling off recently, whereas China and South Africa, you know, we've seen a great rally coming from them in recent months. And then India has always been this great story over the last few years. So it's about being selective in emerging markets. But let's bring it home. So you asked about how South Africa is doing relative to other EMs. It's actually, this question probably in the past would have taken 1 minute to get through. It's actually so, there's so much positivity going on in all the different markets. So it's really a great time. So firstly, in South Africa recently, there's obviously improvements on these key drags in growth. We've had a hiatus in load shedding. We've had logistic improvements. The formation of the GNU is obviously seeing positivity from the markets. And most critically is that we've seen a tangible output of when the private and the public sector work together. And I know Hendrik and Dr. Corsa mentioned this on the panel in the summit.
Hendrik is so critical. The CEO of 91, just to bring our audience into the discussion, the panel that we had at the Cogen Summit, Kerry, just to set that context, Hendrik du Toit, the CEO of 91, Dr. Ruwal Khoza, the chairman of Discovery Bank, and we also had the chairman of Eskom, Mteto Nyati. Sorry to interrupt your flow there.
Never apologize. That's great context. So yes, they were all bringing to light, you know, and demonstrating that clear, tangible collaboration between public and private sector, which is going to be critical going forward. I think an important thing to measure, but it's a positive for South Africa right now, is there have been some key EM markets that have performed really well in recent years, so Mexico and Vietnam. But they are actually a lot more vulnerable to a potential Trump presidency, given the percentage of exports to the US. So South Africa, we still will be impacted, but not necessarily to as great an extent of them. But I think the biggest challenge for South Africa today is in the economic space, it's growth. You know, it's been reiterated in the recent midterm budget with Treasury lowering the growth expectations from 1.3% to 1.1%. And we obviously, Treasury is obviously taking a more conservative approach. We don't really burn as we have in the past. But ultimately, we're very far behind where our EM peers are. And that's a key concern for South Africa. But I think the last thing I would say on that is how we're faring is, you know, within the EM markets, there's undervalued opportunity within the equity space and within currency. And South Africa is definitely one of those markets where the valuation does seem to be supportive of the investment opportunity. So it's a really exciting time for South Africa.
There's another theme that I want to bring to the fore. I see Ian Williamson is in the waiting room, CEO of Old Mutual Group, and we'll be chatting to him in just a moment. Again, just to remind the audience that that will be on the update on Old Mutual Bank, which is set for launch in 2025. And we'll also be talking to Ian about the Government of National Unity and the positivity that is building within the South African space. But Kerry, a big theme at the Cogen Summit was, of course, longevity and the impact that it is having on retirement. And there was also this concept around health years versus wealth years. So into retirement, just to unpack that for our audience, it's about living healthier.
Yes, it was definitely one of the pertinent themes that came out of the conference. I think, you know, it's quite topical at the moment, these GLPs, these weight loss drugs, you know, that have been on the market, the likes of Ozempic. And it's kind of brought this concept right to the forefront in terms of what's keeping everyone focused in the investment markets at the moment. You know, let's look at the reason GLPs have been brought onto the market. You know, obesity is an economy killer and it's a retirement challenge globally. We're seeing healthcare costing more and more for countries every year. And these costs are expected to balloon going forward. And the cost is twofold. Firstly, you've got a growing burden on the government in terms of funding healthcare. But secondly, it's actually creating less productive workforces. So the hopes are that these drugs such as Ozempic can actually extend life, not just be weight loss drugs, to help lower that burden on the government and create a more productive workforce. But, you know, this health conversation is so important when you look at the longevity conundrum that you've mentioned that the world is facing where people are living longer. And it's largely because of medical technology continuing to improve. An interesting statistic that came out of the summit was that the percentage of robot-led surgeries in 2023 in the US was a whopping 20%. So we're expecting this to continue and efficiencies to come through. But there is a big problem with the fact that everyone's living longer, is that they're also outliving their savings and up to about, it can be sometimes up to 10 years. And I think for us, we're always interested in investor psychology. And if you bring this back to, you know, inherent human behavior, people are largely irrational when it comes to decision-making. And we tend to display behavior like overconfidence or risk miscalculation. And there's also a term called hyperbolic discounting. Now, that means when you choose immediate rewards over larger later rewards. So if you bring that to the savings landscape, you know, people are always like, we'll do that tomorrow. We'll worry about it tomorrow in the future. And the same thing impacts your health. People say, I'll sort it out later. But it is critical to be aware of your health and savings in terms of your actual overall retirement plan. It's not just about investment returns. And your clients and investors actually have the ability to improve their health. There's controllable behaviors. You can drink less. You can stop smoking. You can prioritize your mental health. So for us, you know, particularly at Cogens, we know that this is a huge problem. And we are really trying to solve for it by making investors think about it today and not waiting in 10, 15 years' time to deal with it.
Let's go straight to our partners at Bloomberg and get an update on the U.S. election.
News when you want it with Bloomberg News Now. I'm Doug Krisner. The presidential candidates are making their final pitches ahead of Election Day. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris speaking in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
But let us do the work as we work toward this win of building up community and coalition and reminding everyone that we have so much more in common than what separates us. Let that be our goal.
Meantime, former President Trump also spoke in Pittsburgh.
That's all I ask. In conclusion, with your vote tomorrow, we are going to fire Kamala. We're going to save America. We will cut your taxes, end inflation, slash your prices, raise your wages, and bring thousands and thousands of factories back to America and back to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Now, before the final votes are cast, Donald Trump has been raising more doubt about the integrity of the election and ramping up violent rhetoric as well. Journalist Bob Woodward from The Washington Post is warning of the danger he sees in returning the former president to the White House.
My first interview with him was 35 years ago when he was a real estate king in New York City. And then, and even in interviews I did in the Oval Office with him when he was president, he's driven by instinct. He's got this idea that his instincts, what his gut feel is perfect. That's the way to go.
Bob Woodward there of the Washington Post. The nation's top official for safeguarding election infrastructure called the spread of election fraud allegations irresponsible and corrosive to our democracy. Jen Easterly, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, said election officials are braced for disruptions throughout Election Day and in the days that follow. And she said results are not official until certified by chief election officials at the state level. In Maricopa County, Arizona, Sheriff Russ Skinner said his office will be ready for a safe election.
We can't predict everything that's going to happen, but we have prepared, equip, and train our staff to make sure that we have a posture that will make sure that we are safe and secure.
That was Russ Skinner, sheriff in Maricopa County, Arizona. The battle for control of U.S. Congress has already topped $10 billion as the two parties vie for power and influence over things like taxes, spending, and the president's agenda. Bloomberg's Amy Morris brings us a preview of the Senate races from Washington.
Standing by now is Ian Williamson, who is the CEO of Old Mutual. Ian, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the opportunity to engage this morning. And welcome to Biz News Briefing. 5th of November, the U.S. election is upon us. I suppose we have to just start there in terms of, have you been watching the news flow?
I must be honest, I've put my head in the sand a little bit about this thing. The last I saw, it's neck and neck, and you know, we wait and see what the outcome will be. I think it's you know, the implications for markets and for global policy are quite profound. So I think we really We're really going to be sitting on the edges of our chairs for the next 2 or 3 days as we watch the contest. But hopefully we'll be clear about...
Exactly, as you say. And looks as though it's neck and neck. All eyes will be glued to those television and radio platforms over the next couple of days. But let's bring it home and to the South African space. I want to talk to you about the environment. We seem to be building into this positivity. I'm hearing it from a number of different leaders around the Government of National Unity, around traction that we are already seeing on the ground, bearing in mind that the election was only in July. So this has been pretty speedy traction if we're starting to see that translate into tangible results. Let me stop there and get your thoughts on how you see things unfolding.
Yeah, so I completely agree. I think that the environment is probably the most positive in a decade in the country. It feels a little bit, it feels like a better version of what we had during what everyone called Ramaphosa in the first round of the Ramaphosa elections. But this time I think it seems to be backed up by quite a lot of concrete things that are going on. So, you know, if I think about the fact that, as we all know now, load shedding has been a thing of the past for a while, there's every prospect that that's sustainable, looks like. There's a big pipeline of further private solar energy, public-private solar energy capacity that'll come on stream by the end of this year to further de-risk the demand-supply imbalance on the electricity side. And then on the logistics side, which is, you know, there's those three legs, where business-government collaboration agenda. ESCOM was one. The second one is the logistics area. And there, I think, again, you see some solid improvements in some critical areas. Some of the critical targeting plans are looking a bit better. I've heard a stat from somebody the other day that their pipeline of supply for the first time is the demand, the order book is very full. And they supply these little connectors that connect the railway sleepers to the railway lines. And they say this is the best business they've seen in 4 or 5 years. So there's some little micro data points out there that seem to indicate that, you know, things really are progressing and there's real stuff happening. And then if I look at, there's been quite a bit of progress in the background on some of the climate corruption stuff as well. But what we really do need to start seeing, I think, to kind of close that circle is some slightly more progress on the prosecution side. So I think in all, that's all good. That's then, I think, further supported by the interest rate cycle turning, inflation coming down, you know, the rand has strengthened, petrol prices have come down quite significantly, inflation's down, inflation expectations are down even more. Interest rate cycle started to turn. I would expect another rate cut in November. And, you know, that's all good for economic growth and the health of the consumer. So lots of reasons to be optimistic and a lot more positive than we've been in a while. So, and I think that mood is pervasive. You know, everyone I talk to is a lot more positive than they've been in a long, long time.
We also... appropriate at this point to get an update on Old Mutual Bank. Now, you've just laid the landscape of a healthier consumer. So looking to 2025, if we continue to see that interest rate cycle coming down and the consumer getting more and more buoyant, it's really going to lay a positive environment for the launch of Old Mutual Bank. Can you give us any updates on that side, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a team hard at work building the infrastructure for the bank for the last 2.5 years. That's now finished. So we have the infrastructure required to run and support the bank from a technology perspective, you know, call center technology, core banking systems, all that sort of good stuff. We're really excited about what the guys have produced. We've got a fabulous app that'll go live in the new year. What we now need to finish off is the constitution of both the board to oversee that company and the executive team to run the company with appropriate skills that the regulator is comfortable with from a banking skills perspective. And because at our core, we're not a banking business. Historically, in South Africa, at least, we've obviously had to hire in some people to provide those skills. So that's the piece that we're just finalizing. Once that's done, we'll be good to go. And the intention is that'll be early in the new year. As you say, I think landing in a relatively positive environment, but equally into a very competitive space. So, you know, we're not doing this with our eyes closed. We know what we're up against. But as I say, we're really excited about the proposition that we'll bring to market, that we think will be something new and fresh and exciting. And, you know, give the core middle mass market consumer in South Africa another option. And I think quite an exciting and compelling one.
So we're just waiting for checks and balances, if I hear you correctly, from the regulatory environment, but you as Old Mutual, ready to go as soon as you get the green light.
Yep, we are ready to go. Absolutely.
While we're talking about positivity and building momentum, let's also look to the G20 presidency, which is going to take place next year on South African soil. And when I talk about the presidency, obviously we're taking that over from December, but the summit itself will happen in South Africa. This is going to be an event unlike any other that we've seen on South African soil. The G20, Ian, are you excited about this?
Yeah, it really is quite huge. Now, we take over from Brazil with the presidency in December, and I think it creates the presidency itself, I think, creates an opportunity for South Africa to influence effectively global policy around economic integration, trade opportunities, etc. And I think what the president has said is that the intention is to work with the AU, who are also a member of the G20, to further the agenda around some of the African integration issues. You know, the African Free Trade Continental Agreement has been in place for a while now. It's got some quite good traction, but equally there's some barriers, and some of those barriers are related to some of these things that can only be solved at the sort of the next level up, if it were. So there's an opportunity, I think, in this G20 positioning to progress some of that agenda. The summit itself is a huge opportunity for South Africa to showcase, you know, business opportunity, business capability, particularly for businesses that are involved in things like import, export, logistics, etc., you know, some of the more complex trade type issues. So I think there is a huge opportunity. And as you say, it will be an enormous event. I think if the Brazilian one is easy to go by, that will be really huge. And I think the hotels in Joburg will be doing a roaring trade for that period of time. So, you know, very exciting, and I think really looking forward to that.
Ian, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us this morning and fitting us into your pressurized diary. We look forward to engaging as Old Mutual Bank comes to reality in 2025. As long as you keep me on the hot list in terms of that news flow, we'll be very happy here at the BizNews community. So Ian Williamson, thank you very much for your time, sir, is the CEO of Old Mutual Group joining us here on BizNews. Now let's dip into an interview that I did yesterday with the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield. And the focus in this discussion was very much around what the Department of Trade and Industry is really doing for small, medium businesses in South Africa and how we can tap into what they are building as they try and drive economic growth within the country. Let's take a look.
Thank you very much for having me, Bronwyn. We met just shortly after our trip to Washington on a go, and perhaps let me start with that and say that there's been a tremendous effort by the Government of National Unity to rebuild and reset that relationship. Minister Parks Tower and I were in Washington at the end of June, beginning of July this year, and then on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly, President Ramaphosa and the full GNU team were out there making sure that we keep that relationship building exercise front and center. There were trips down to Washington from Minister Lamola as well as Minister Tao during September as well, which is, I think, significant given the importance of the relationship in the United States and given the the focus on resetting that relationship, that there has been such emphasis over the last 4 months of the GNU, making sure that we keep that relationship on track. There's obviously a big election taking place this week, and we need to bear in mind that there may be implications. But I think that on both sides of the House and Congress, there's been a lot of work done by the GNU, both houses of Congress, both sides of the House, and making sure that South Africa remains front and center insofar as Africa is concerned and the African Continental Free Trade Area. And so I'm excited about the prospects to strengthen the relationship, and very, very excited, Bronwyn, just to say that the key outcome of that visit was the reestablishment of the Trade and Investment Framework Agreement, which is a bilateral platform for South Africa and the United States to engage. I think in the context of what's happening or what may happen, it's important that there is a strengthening of the bilateral relationship between our two countries and not just within the context of AGOA.
So, Deputy Minister, there are a lot of people who are watching this conversation who are small businesses, medium enterprises, large businesses as well, certainly farmers. What does it all mean for them at the end of the day? If we really break it down for the man and the woman on the ground in South Africa, how does what you are doing, the work that you are doing as the Department of Trade and Industry, going to further the agenda to grow South Africa's economy through these businesses?
So our mission is to make it easier for businesses to grow and to create jobs and for people to be able to keep those jobs, right? If I was to simplify it right down to those basics, that is what it is. We need to become a much more accessible and responsive government. I'm very pleased at what the work we've been doing insofar as interfacing with the private sector, making sure that we create platforms to engage with industry. I've met with a number of small and medium-sized enterprises over the last 4 months to listen to their challenges, whether it's on tariffs, whether it's export readiness of their businesses, understanding access to markets that exist around the world for their products. There's a huge amount of work being done inside the department to make sure that we communicate the opportunities that are available. Many South African businesses are not aware of the extent to which DTIC provides support insofar as not just incentives, but training and development, for example, on the export readiness side. There are specific programs where the department can assist. But I think generally what we are trying to do is to make sure that market sentiment remains positive, not just abroad, but here domestically as well. There's been a lot of effort and energy outside of the DTIC within the broader GNU and making sure that our energy supply is stable and secure, making sure that we focus on our logistics environment, freight specifically on the rail side, and then our ports as a key piece of enabling infrastructure. And the DTIC, Bronwyn, I think what is significant to your viewers is that for the first time, I think in a very long time, the Department of Trade and Industry is now the chair of the economics cluster within government. And that's important because we are the policy nexus or the economic policy nexus of government, and we're able to then coordinate and give a sense of urgency to all other departments within government that we need to stay on track with the economic reform agenda, which is well underway.
The one thing that we are not shifting, Deputy Minister, is the level of unemployment in South Africa. In fact, it's going in the wrong direction. Is this a key focus at every engagement that you have, whether it is with public or private sector players?
Well, there is absolute consensus within the government of national unity, and I think broadly in society and across business, is that if the GNU cannot move the needle on growth and jobs, Bronwyn, then we will have failed. And so the conversation is very much focused on how do we create jobs by making the difficult decisions required in order to achieve growth, and to look into the future. I think one of the things that we do because of our past in the country is that we don't look far enough in the future. We need to be bold and ambitious about what lies ahead in the future. And we need to be honest about where we can be competitive as an economy. We have a tremendous amount of resources that we need to deploy more efficiently and strategically to get better returns on growth and jobs. That is something that I am very exercised with in making sure that we identify those opportunities, some low-hanging fruit, whether it's in process or the actual allocation of financial incentives? How do we structure our economy to create that inclusive growth and job creation? Absolutely critical. I'm particularly passionate, Bronwyn, about the global business services sector, for example, where the master plan has a target of 500,000 jobs, I think, by 2035. We're currently in the region of 140,000, 150,000 jobs, if I'm not mistaken. And there's huge scope for growth. Broadly in the services sector, South Africa has huge scope to export our services all over the world. And as an emerging economy that is the gateway into the African continent, African continental free trade area, we are incredibly well positioned on that front. So I'm very positive about the way that things are shaping up. And I want to also just say that I think that the great frustration is that nothing happens as quickly as we'd like it to. And it is going to take some time to turn the ship around, but the ship is turning in the right direction. And there's a lot of effort and emphasis in making sure we make the right decisions for growth and jobs.
I've been having a number of conversations with captains of industry, namely Hendrik du Toit, the CEO of 91, Dr. Rual Khoza, who's the chairman of Discovery Bank, and also chatting to Mteto Nyati, who's the chair of Eskom, obviously a different play within that ecosystem. But the overall sentiment is that private and public sector engagement is on an upward trajectory beyond anything that we have seen before. Can you confirm that from your vista in public sector?
Yes, absolutely, I can. I can tell you that I've never been so busy in my life, having a range of different meetings, Bronwyn, and many of those meetings, whether they are with the private sector or just government to government, the conversation is very much focused about how do we partner with the private sector to unlock opportunities by sharing our experiences, our skills, our talents, and collaborating towards inclusive growth and jobs, 100%. The minister has been very publicly outspoken about this as well, which I think is very important, not just for sentiment, but that actually is finding expression within government. I think, you know, Operation Vulindlela and other interventions through the presidency have yielded very positive results. And when we were in London with Hendrik du Toit and other captains of financial industry, we were absolutely just incredibly well received. So there is that positive sentiment, and I think that sentiment is founded on, it's not just sentiment based on sentiment and good feels. This is sentiment that is based on a genuine commitment to collaborate with the private sector in order to unlock those growth opportunities. So my experience so far has been, you know, while not perfect and not where we would like it to be, it is absolutely moving in the right direction. And the critical thing will be the difficult decisions that are required. And I think you can see from the medium-term budget policy statement that this is a government prepared to make difficult decisions in the short term to build a sustainable pathway to growth and job creation in the medium to long term.
Just in close, I was considering your position before I engaged in this discussion. And I know that when I wake up on a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning and I look at my diary and it's jam-packed, it just seems almost impossible to navigate. And I thought, well, let me just put myself in the Deputy Minister's shoes of trade, industry and competition for a moment. How do you personally feel you could navigate this? For me, in my little world, it seems absolutely overbearing at times. And you have got so many moving parts, as you rightly say. You are responsible for such a huge part of the South African economy and driving that economy. Personally, how do you feel, Deputy Minister? It's just 3 months, July, August, September, October, now into November. Have you got the staying power here? Because I can imagine it's coming from you at every angle.
Well, you're really peeling back the layers here, Bronwyn. But when you said you were considering my position, I was wondering if you wanted to take the job. But I think that it is extraordinarily complex, and we are we're very fortunate. We've got a lot of good people in government, and there are a lot of people really working hard to do the right things and get things right. That gives me tremendous energy. You know, we all have families. We have people who aren't our family, but in South Africa, we all feel like one big family. And so there's a lot of pressure to get it right. There's a lot of pressure to get up in the morning and you know, to get through that diary, which is busy. I shudder to think what the minister's diary looks like if I look at mine. And, you know, I think the critical thing is to make sure our diaries are productive towards our core objectives. It's very easy for a diary to be busy, if I can be frank, but it's got to be productive. It has to be designed and geared towards maximum efficiency, and we are certainly getting there. The first couple of months, there was a lot more in the diary than needed to be. We've become a lot more strategic with our time. And being strategic with the time ensures that there's sufficient energy resilience within my system to try and stay the course and to make sure that we achieve what needs to be done. There's a lot of travel, and there's a lot of personal sacrifice in public services. And is, you know, I think that there are a lot of people committed to doing the right things for the right reasons that are making tremendous sacrifice, which is really great to be part of a team where people are making those sacrifices together. And so nobody, I think, feels entirely isolated, especially in a government of national unity when there are 10 political parties. So there are a lot of us around the table, you know, and that's also an exciting project is making sure that we find each other in the interests of everybody else in South Africa and the future of our economy. It's the busiest, it's the most exciting, it's the most challenging and frustrating and dynamic job I've ever had. And I think anything else after this would be quite boring.
You bring me to one final question. I know I said that was the last one, but the government of national unity, you mentioned so many different people sitting around the table. There is an excitement building externally. There are also observers externally who are detractors to the government of national unity. But Deputy Minister, it's tangible in terms of what I'm feeling, certainly in this conversation, that you are moving the needle and that the government of national unity is in full swing. Can we leave it on that note?
Yes, give and take. The government of national unity, any coalition, is give and take, and that will be the key deciding factor on the success of the GNU at the moment. We are having the difficult conversations. They will continue. There will be some noise. But I believe there are enough good people wanting to do the right things in the moment to make sure that it succeeds.
Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield, joining us on BizNews. For more on that full interview, you can go to biznews.com. With me now is Jean-Pierre Falstaff, who is the CEO and founder of Protea Capital Management. Jean-Pierre, thank you so much. Great to have you with us. And just getting a sense, you know, we've been talking about the US election today. Give me a sense of what you are going to be focusing on and how you expect this to disrupt markets.
Morning, Bronwyn. Yes, quite an auspicious day. It's been interesting the last few days. Global markets have not seen a lot of volatility. So it might be the calm before the storm. All the polls are showing it's on a knife's edge between the two candidates. It might be on a knife's edge in terms of the popular vote, but there are a few betting markets that are showing that Trump is the probable winner, but not by a large margin. So typically in markets, you know, we never know what's going to happen next. We play the probabilities, so we're not doing much. Our portfolios are well-structured. I don't know who's going to win, and you'll need to wait and see. The one thing that is clear is that whichever candidate wins, the expectation is it might lead to more spending, which means interest rates could go higher and the dollar could weaken. But other than that, it doesn't seem like such a possible binary outcome as it was with the election the last time Trump won.
Well, we do have the Fed interest rate decision on Thursday. I was chatting to Kerry Ann Slattery from Cogence earlier. This is a continued downward trend in interest rates as it stands at the moment.
Correct, yes. And it was interesting to see, if you look at some data that one can gauge through looking at company results, you can get more recent indications of what's happening in an economy. So over the weekend, we had the Berkshire Hathaway result that came out. It was very interesting that in the commentary, they mentioned that all the retail companies that they own, and therefore they can see the budgets on a real-time basis and what's happening, have seen negative earnings growth and negative revenue growth. So that indicates that, yes, interest rates are coming down in the US. The consumer seems to be under more pressure than what some of the more lagging data points could indicate. And that's how why you have this push and pull, where weakness in the US, so you might see the Fed cut, you might see interest rates come lower. But on the other end, from a political and fiscal point of view, it seems like a lot of spending is around the corner. So it's going to be very interesting in the coming year to see who's going to win out, the monetary authorities who want to cut rates, or the fiscal authorities who are going to spend so much that maybe that would lead to higher rates.
Jean-Pierre, let's bring it home to the South African space. I was chatting to Ian Williamson, the CEO of Old Mutual Group, and certainly I don't want to be repetitive, but the sentiment appears to be more and more buoyant. Alec Hogg was talking to Sean Summers yesterday from a Pick and Pay perspective. They've just done a great deal with F&E and eBucks. So corporate South Africa seems to be roaring ahead, and positivity is the order of the day. Are you buying into that positivity?
We had been buying earlier this year when there was a lot of uncertainty regarding the election. And it's very interesting, if you look at the share prices of most domestically focused companies, the share prices have done particularly well over the last year. But that means that, as usual, one needs to think ahead, and you might do the opposite of what a lot of people are thinking. So we are a little bit reticent and wondering if this isn't Ramaphoria 2.0. And whether some people are not getting ahead of themselves. So yes, sentiment has picked up, but now we need to see delivery. Now we need to see real progress on the ground, real policies being delivered that are business friendly, that you can see that in profit growth. You haven't seen that yet. You haven't seen South African companies show a turn in terms of stronger profit growth. The expectation it will come, and that's why sentiment has turned. But for it to be sustainable, we need to see the real results also be positive as well, so that we aren't once bitten, twice shy in terms of the last time we had this Ramaphoria feeling.
You said you were buying in the lead up to the election to capitalize on that positivity. Is there any value in the South African market? I know that you do have a significant international portfolio, but are there pockets of value within South Africa at the moment?
Yes, we believe there are still pockets of value. So we had been buying the retailers and the financial stocks, and we've been trimming them of late, like I said, after very good runs. But the one area of the South African market that hasn't seen that strong rise in share prices is more in the mid-cap space. So across a host of industries, those are the companies that are a little bit smaller. A change in sentiment and a change in the actual policies and economy will have a bigger impact on them, but the share prices have not anticipated it yet. So there's a long list of mid-caps that we still think offers value in South Africa. The likes of Combined Motor Holdings, their profits are under pressure in terms of the latest result, but going forward, you might see vehicle sales and tourism do very well. And a few others, Caxton has got a new lease on life where they're really focusing on results and delivering to shareholders and not just the management team. There's a
so
long
Caxton,
list of...
Than previously in the print business, right?
Correct, yes. So
now you're moving to servicing companies' interim and full-year results?
Yes, they still have significant print and, like you say, media-related businesses. They also are growing their packaging businesses. But the big thing is they've got a long history of very mediocre returns, where one could say that they didn't really worry too much about external shareholders, because they do have a controlling shareholder who still runs the business. And in the last year, you could see that change, where the founder is now in his 80s. And there's been a definite shift in focus to say, well, we need to deliver to shareholders. And when companies do that, they add that catalyst where they focus more on returns than they used to in the past. That's a wonderful opportunity for you to benefit from the turnaround. And there are a few opportunities like that, including Caxton.
We've spoken extensively about the international fold, and I know that you are a long-term investor. You take your positions and you hold. I've asked you before, Jean-Pierre, but as we go to the close of the show, the biggest opportunity in the European space. And I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but I just want to check where we go with this.
So in Europe, we still like the semiconductor companies, the likes of ASML, BST. They've also been under pressure recently, but the long term still looks very good for semiconductor equipment manufacturers, really early in the process. The likes of Novo Nordisk that make all the GLP inhibitors that are seen as a wonder drug has also been under pressure of late. So some companies that have got very good long-term prospects, share prices have come low over the last few months. I think that gives one opportunity. So yes, on the long side, keeping them for the long term. On the short side, a lot of companies are expensive that we can short in our hedge funds. So there's always opportunity.
And then just as we get closer to December, I mean, we're already down on the first week of November. What do you do as the market over December? Do you take a breather, or is that a good opportunity to go hunting in the investment space?
So a number of years ago, historically, people would go on leave over December, so it'd be very quiet. But I don't know if you remember, Bronwyn, about 2 years ago, and to some extent last year, December was quite eventful. There was quite a bit of volatility, especially in the first half of December. So now, as investment managers these days, especially if you go up against quant strategies and computers and algorithms, even if you're on holiday, I'll do the same. I'll have my phone with me on the beach and we'll still monitor markets because there are opportunities and December is not as quiet as it used to be.
Jean-Pierre, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Biz News Briefing. Looking forward to chatting to you again. Jean-Pierre Fachetat is the founder and CEO of Protea Capital Management. And that brings us to the end of today's Biz News Briefing. It is the 5th of November. All eyes on the US election. Alec will be with you tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock.